Hey everybody, Jason here. Just to let you know, this episode is a wonderful interview. I hope you enjoy it. But before we get into that, I want to mention that there is a very special unboxing with a special guest after TJ Drennan's end theme song. So if you're not turned off by unboxings like Mr. Jason Hobbs is, you may want to stay till the end. Okay, let's get into the episode.
Pockets of a beer or a cold libation. I can tell you how I wrote this little theme. I went and took a call from Brother Jason, and he tells me that he has a little dream. He says he needs a backwards intro to begin his podcast, and I ask him, what you got? He said, I'll start off with some talking and some moody clips of popcorn fighting fantasy explorations and some groundless exploitation. Kickstarts that I'm watching and some blind unboxings, full month horror movie marathon. Sometimes I let the dogs come on contests, and of course you know it's all about games. That's a slogan, let's just start with the name. It's the Nerds RPG Variety Podcast with the other Jason.
Welcome back to Roleplay Rescue. I'm your host, Jason. Now, this might as well be an episode of Roleplay Rescue, though, that my friend Shea Webster puts out, because my guest today and I actually connected because of Roleplay Rescue. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm okay, Jason. How are you?
I'm doing great.
It's always a pleasure to be back on the Nerds RPG Variety Cast. So thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime. So my guest today, if you don't recognize his voice, is James Knight. He had called into the show before. He's called into other shows, including Roleplay Rescue. And he was on an episode of Cerebrivore where we talked about folk horror and some British horror topics. But the neat thing is, and the reason James joined me today, is he has kind of gotten back into gaming after Cold Freeze. And he's kind of gone after it with a vengeance. So we were going to kind of discuss that return to gaming and the games that he's played and wants to play and his experiences and all that kind of thing. If you're up for that, James.
Yeah, no, it sounds perfect. I mean, yeah, Jason and I have been going back and forth on Discord, and it's been, I think it's probably about 2021. It was definitely during lockdown, and I had indeed been in the deep freeze since my early teens, and I don't mind saying I'm going to be 40 next year. So I was born in 84. So my history with the hobby was that I'd mainly actually being the age I was, Games Workshop by the kind of early to mid 90s had really moved into the tabletop sphere and away from role playing. So I played a lot of Warhammer, a lot of 40K, a lot of Blood Bowl, a lot of the ship based combat game that I suspect was called Man of War.
It was Man of War.
Yeah. I've got it. Because a lot of the time I was mainly playing with my younger brother. And because there was two of us, a lot of those Games Workshop games mm-hmm. that were essentially player versus player were perfect. But I did play some D&D with my cousins. And my excavation, my archaeology suggests that both in terms of timing and the fact that I vividly remember the player's handbook was that it would have been AD&D second ed with bits of a red box basic, whether that was Mulvey Cook or Mensa, I'm not sure, but one of the red boxes was involved. And I always loved it, but it was difficult, you know, as I'll kind of get to in a minute, one of the things that brought me back was the Grognar Files podcast. And those guys talk a lot about how, you know, it was difficult finding people to play with back in the day compared to now, where you're obviously, you know, as we'll get to, there's a plethora of riches available to players these days via online play and online communities. But there was hardly anyone to play with. So it was really something that it always been something I wanted to do more. And then as I kind of got older into my teens, you know, other things kind of as they do began to take my interest. But the thing that really persisted was my love of literature that is kind of hobby related or hobby adjacent. You know, I don't think I would have known about the concepts of the Appendix N back then. But a lot of the stuff that is essentially Appendix N literature, I continued reading all through my teens into my 20s, all the way right till now. And in a weird way, it was that love of Appendix N literature that kind of brought me back to the hobby, in that I was still reading a lot of that stuff. And I discovered that there was an Appendix M podcast. Mm-hmm. And I'd originally heard that through another podcast. I'm really into podcasts, which I guess fits. And the Appendix M podcast, those guys, obviously, they talk about the literature, but they also talked about gaming. And I remembered that an acquaintance of mine I'd seen posting on Twitter about a UK gaming podcast that looked at kind of gaming back in the day in the UK. And that was the Grognard Files podcast. And I distinctly remember that, I don't know how it was in the US, but in the UK during COVID, there was a period in the UK where literally you could only go out for a walk once a day. It was like a mandated daily, like recreational walk. Mm-hmm. And it was on that walk that I started listening to the back catalogue of the Grognard Files, literally, you know, end to end. And then they mentioned on their podcast, Roleplay Rescue, on one of the episodes, Dirk used to do a kind of maybe once a year, but because I was listening to it literally, you know, all in one chunk, it would have been in a matter of days. He did an end of year roundup where he mentioned some other podcasts, one of which was Roleplay Rescue. And yeah, that was really inspiring because obviously, as you know, that was really about Che talking about people like me who'd been, you know, away from the hobby and was getting back into it. And it was through Che's podcast that people like yourself were calling in that were part of what was at that point the Anchorverse. And through that, I began listening to your podcast, Joe's podcast, Hindsightless, Cerebrivore, obviously, and, you know, that whole wider kind of Anchorsphere network. And not too long after that was when I was like, right, enough listening to podcasts, time to get gaming. But obviously, this was still like basically lockdown. So in-person gaming was basically off the table. And I began looking online, and it turned out there was a Discord for something called the London Role Players Collective. And pre-COVID, they met up in person. It was like an in-person club, effectively. But it had all moved online because of COVID. And they had a Discord, and they had various games going. And because of my history with playing, you know, like a kind of AD&D basic mashup, and having, as well as listening to podcasts, been reading a lot of blogs about the OSR, I was really up for basically playing some OSE. And at the point that I joined the OSE game that was running in that server, it had already been running for at least 2, maybe 3 years. And it was run by a guy called Matt Wilkin. Big up Matt, who was my first kind of DM back in. And the game had originally started as a Stonehell Mega Dungeon campaign. Mm-hmm. And they'd been dungeon crawling in there for at least a year, maybe 18 months, I think. And then they came out from the dungeon, and Matt began building a homebrew world using Foundry. And it was like, it was pretty impressive. I think probably because of COVID, he had time, but it was like intense, like continent-wide mapping. And he was doing that thing where he was using pre-written modules and kind of dropping them into his wider homebrew setting. And it was a game that was, at the point I joined, most of the characters, I think, were kind of 5th, 6th, 7th level. But if you joined, I didn't get to do full pathetic aesthetics because we rolled for hit points and came in at 3rd level. And I was playing a druid, which was good, because I think if I'd played a 1st level druid with the kind of modules that those guys were playing at that point, at 5th, 6th, 7th level, I wouldn't have lasted like more than a few sessions. But that was a really cool experience because, yeah, I was starting like low powered, but not super low powered. And I'd never played a druid before. Mm-hmm. It was a guy called Wampus Febland. And I played it, you know, typical druid style. A guy who was, you know, obviously at home in the forest and fell, and was very into partaking in all of the herbal remedies therein. And I played, that was a weekly Sunday game, and that was kind of like the ballast of that early period. And it was really cool. It was like a mix of people who were like me, had kind of come back to it. Like Matt was similar to me. He's kind of my age, maybe a little bit older. But then there were some younger guys who'd kind of been playing 5e and had wanted to play that more like old school style. There was a guy from Brazil who was living in the UK, and he'd had the whole experience of playing, like, you know, RPGs in South America. He was awesome, like amazing role player, like played a really fruity character who seemed to always, no matter where we were, he seemed to always endure mutations. There was one point where he had like multiple tentacles, always would, he was like always the guy that would always pick up the cursed sword. Mm-hmm. As soon as there was a cursed sword, he was going for it for sure. And yeah, I mean, Matt tried to keep the modules we were playing stumm so that no one did any like, you know, sneaky reading or anything. But at the end of the campaign, because it did finally come to an end about 6 months ago, maybe. He played a list of campaigns and it was a lot of stuff. There was quite a few of those Merciless Merchants modules. And we played several of those Lazy Lich modules. And then, like I said, a lot of it, the overall narrative and story was all kind of Matt's homebrew. So, you know, there were these kind of overarching quests and narratives that were kind of Matt's homebrew. And then he'd knit these modules in where it made sense. So yeah, that was like an awesome experience. And then while that was going on, I was beginning to, this was because we're going to get to the end of, things are opening up again now. So I was really up for doing some conventions. And my first convention was this time last year, because Owlbear and the Wizard Staff, which is a convention in Leamington Spa, Fair Leamington Spa in England, which is in the Midlands, quite near Birmingham. Mm-hmm. That is next week. So almost a year ago, as of this week, was my first in-person con. Apart from Warhammer stuff when I was, you know, 12. Mm-hmm. And at that, I played some OSE again and some Cairn, which is really cool. And then not long after that was Grogmeet, which is the annual convention of the Grognar Files. Right. And that was really awesome because that was like a bunch of people that I'd been at that point interacting with on Discord and on Twitter. And it's a three-day in-person con in Manchester. Dirk and Blythe, who run the Grognar Files, are actually from, they're from the northwest near Manchester. Manchester's the nearest big city. They're actually from a place called Bolton, that kind of area. But yeah, Manchester's an awesome city and everyone stays locally in hotels. And it's set in the main location is a gaming cafe called Fanboy 3. And then there are games also in a nearby kind of pub around the corner. And It was awesome from start to finish. On the first afternoon, on the Friday, when you get there, they play a multi-table game. And this one was, it was using Mothership as the rule set, but it was called Grogmania. And it was basically recreating the Blockmania storyline from Judge Dredd, where each table was a block. And there were seven GMs, and everyone would stay on their table, but the GMs would rotate. And so all seven tables played all seven games. And it was, I think there were 40 minutes on the clock and there were points. So each table would be racking up points for their block. And at the end, the table with the most points won. We didn't win, but it was awesome. And it really took me back to, as well as gaming, as with a lot of kind of British people, I'd read 2000 AD mm-hmm. and the Judge Dredd magazine as a kid. And all of the GMs had really done like an amazing job of really bringing to life, you know, a lot of the flavor from that whole world of Judge Dredd. And like I said, it was using Mothership, but it was almost by the by, because it was really, you know, seven completely short, sharp, unique kind of challenge-based games. Mm-hmm. And one was like, you know, you're on like chopper style sky surf boards with like the judges chasing you on Lawmasters. Another one was like a fatty eating competition where you had to come up with innovative ways of trying to get your fatty to eat the quickest. There was like a Stooky Glander kind of heist mission. And it was just like awesome because I hadn't even, I hadn't even really thought about 2000 AD for years. I'd watched the movie in whenever that came out, 2015-ish, yeah. The Carl Urban one, which I thought was good. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, I hadn't really thought, and it all came kind of flooding back. And there's a guy that regularly posts in the Grognar Files community called Daily Dwarf, mm-hmm. and he actually ran a Strontium dog game in the evening session, and I was chatting to him in the pub afterwards, and it really brought back a lot of those 2000 AD memories. And ever since then, I'm back like subscribing to 2000 AD. So that's yet again, like, you know, another awesome thing that gaming's brought me. It's brought me back to the world of 2000 AD, to the point where I actually appeared on another podcast recently, which I'll send you a link to, called the Mega City Book Club podcast. And it was looking back at the Hondo City Lore Collection, which was the, you know, the Japanese, it's the kind of like the Tokyo analog in the world of Judge Dredd. And the first issue of the magazine that I bought in 93 had one of these Hondo City stories in that was written by Robbie Morrison and illustrated by Frank Quitely, who went on to do, you know, a lot of stuff in US comics. He did like The Authority and Justice League and stuff, like an amazing artist. And yet another thing that gave me up and over me. Yeah. And then at that con, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, yeah, the US, once the 2000 AD was doing good and getting popular, the US companies were picking those artists over and pulling them over here and, you know, cherry picking those artists and dragging them over to the US. And then they found a lot of them. There's a great 2000 AD documentary about the history.
Future Shock.
Yeah. I highly recommend it. And they talk about, you know, how they kind of, you know, yeah, it was great to come to America, but, you know, it wasn't nearly the same. And a lot of them regretted making that move, you know, in hindsight to some degree.
It was really interesting for me because, again, it's difficult to kind of almost imagine, but the period we're talking about, the early 90s, I mean, there was the internet. It did exist, but I think we probably got our first dial-up modem more like 95, 96, but in the early 90s, information about so many things was difficult to come by. And as well as reading 2000 AD, I was reading US comics, and the US comics I was drawn to were the Vertigo comics. Mm. And almost all of those writers that were writing on Vertigo, Garth Ennis, Warren Ellis, Grant Morrison, they'd all been, like you're saying, 2000 AD creators that Vertigo in that Future Shock documentary, they talk about it. It's it's Karen, someone who was the line editor for Vertigo. She pretty much turned up in London, posted up in a hotel room, entertained all the UK creators, offered them contracts, and within like a year they'd like wholesale gone over to the States. And like the vast majority, Jamie Delano, tons of those Vertigo creators, were, they'd all cut their teeth on 2000 AD. But by the point I was reading a lot of those guys, because it was difficult to get back issues, that was the thing. I talk about it in my Mega City Book Club podcast appearance. There was a shop in Kingston that was called Books Bits and Bobs, and Books Bits and Bobs stocked back issues. But unless you went to one of the London Comic Cons, or they were called the London Comic Marts, they were called, it was very patchy. And because I'm a completist, you know, I have that like urge to kind of, you know, complete runs of things. And and I'm a collector. I mean, I guess a lot of us in this space are. It used to drive me crazy that I get an issue that would have an awesome fragment of a story in, but because you couldn't pick up the other issues, you could never get the whole story. And by that point, they were doing trades of 2000 AD. There's a company called Titan who were collecting trades, and you used to see them advertised in the back of issues of 2000 AD. But back then, those were like £10 then in the early 90s. And that was like a lot of money back then. And I was like, wow, I could buy like an issue of the magazine, which had like a ton of stories in, for like £1 or £1.50. So it's like, you know, it was like a year's worth of magazines to get one trade. And I was like, well, I could get the whole of the Apocalypse War, which I know must be important because they keep referencing it, but I would have to somehow find, you know, £10 or £12 to get it. But now I have a bit more money, and I've gone back and I've been mainlining trades.
it's interesting that, so I was at Fort Ord in Monterey, California up to through 93 when we closed the fort down. And that actually during that period in 93 is when I was actually first got my hands really on Judge Dredd comics. And it wasn't just Judge Dredd, but I don't remember if they were, and I'd have to look at the publishing history, see how they're published, but like Rogue Trooper, I remember. And, you know, I don't know if they were separate or like their Rogue Trooper stories in the back of the Judge Dredd, or how, you know, what these US versions look like. I don't remember now, cause I don't own any of those anymore, you know, from bouncing around the army and stuff. But that was the first time I really, you know, going to comic conventions there on the West Coast of the US in California and picking up a lot of those issues and reading those, and like the Robot Wars and stuff. I remember all that vividly, you know, those were like the issues they had.
But yeah, I think listening to kind of US people talk about it, I think your intuition is correct. I think they would reprint Judge Dredd stories in the main and kind of sell it as Dredd, but then there would be ancillary stories in the back. Mm-hmm. So it would mainly be like a Dredd reprint, but it might have like Rogue Trooper or Strontium Dog at the back. And I can't remember the company. It might have been IDW. I can't remember which company it would have been. You'd know better than me.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Anyway, I derailed you. Sorry.
Oh, no, not at all. Going back to that Grog meet, I played in the evening of that first session. I played Vason for the first time, which is a game I played quite a few times subsequently since, which I really like, really enjoyable. It's that free league dice pool system. And it's, you know, it's a great mix of kind of Cthulhu style investigation, but it has like a, you know, like a unique kind of Norse twist. And I'm that's one of the games I'm hoping to run, which I'll get to kind of later, because I've got there's the Mythic Britain supplement for it, which links back to my appearance on Cerebrivore, because that kind of really evokes a lot of that kind of British folk horror kind of element. So I've got, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm always kind of spooling up like campaigns in my head now. So that's one that I definitely like to run. And I also like the idea of actually trying to run Vaesen a bit longer term, because I've only ever actually played it as one shots. But when you read the rule book, it has, there's like an infrastructure there for actually kind of running it as a campaign. You know, you could basically have like a base and you can kind of like build your base. And after missions, you know, your skills, you know, appreciate. So it'd be cool to kind of run that as a mini campaign. So yeah, played some Vaesen there. And then the next day I played a really awesome, again, kind of more of like an urban horror RPG, Liminal. Mm-hmm. Do you know that one by Paul Michener? Yep. And that was an awesome one-shot homebrewed by another guy who regularly posts in the Grognar Files community called Zos93. And it was set in the world of kind of Roxy music, kind of classic period Roxy music, and he'd kind of used a single lyric from a Roxy music song and kind of built a whole scenario around it. And our crew, I won't kind of spoil it because I think he still runs the scenario, but yeah, it's totally awesome. If you ever get a chance to play in one of Andrew's Os93's Liminal games, and he offers it again, it's called In Every Dream Home a Heartache, which is a Roxy music song. And it involved, without giving too much away, Russian oligarchs, a blow-up sex doll in a swimming pool, and the lyrics of Roxy music. and the what else did I, I'm just trying to remember the final game I played that weekend. It would have been, I played Mothership in the evening. Again, another homebrew scenario. That's the great thing about this, the Grognar Files community. It's a lot of guys that either played a lot back in the day and then deep-freezed, and have come back with a lot of kind of latent knowledge, or a lot of guys who played all the way through. And again, so you're dealing with a lot of guys who've got a lot of kind of accumulated gaming experience, and a lot of the kind of the homebrewed scenarios were fantastic. And this was a Mothership game that was really, it was that kind of, it was classic Mothership. It was like leaning into that kind of alien horror. Again, I won't go into details because it was awesome. It was Dark Side of the Moon. So again, there was this, because there was a theme to the Grog Meet. It was a lot to do with kind of like the prog, kind of 70s prog kind of vibe. So that was based on, yeah, the Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon lyric. And it involved, it was a classic. I mean, the opening I can give you, because it doesn't give too much away, but you know, you all wake up in a cabin and no one has any memory. And then slowly you begin to piece together what's happened. And yeah, it was, the ending was awesome. So yeah, that was so those were my first two kind of conventions back. And I still had this OSE game running in the background. And I'd also started playing a bit of Electric Bastion Land Into the Odd online, which was really awesome. I'd met a guy on the New School Revolution Discord server who goes by Lovely Zoo, and he was running a game. And that was really cool. And that was the first system that really I was like, well, I could run this, you know. It's simple enough. I kind of felt like maybe I could have run OSE out of the gate because I played it long enough that I kind of felt I could. But I also knew that I kind of wanted to play with some old friends of mine. And I thought, even though I thought, oh, I could run OSE out of the gate, I thought they might struggle because only one of them, two a little bit, had played back in the day. And then there were two guys who were interested in playing that hadn't played at all. And I thought, Into the Odd, Electric Bastion Land, it's so simple. Like literally anyone could pick that up. And even if they can't pick it up, I just tell them what to roll. And it's super simple, quick to pick up. So I started running a game. I started it off with a one-page dungeon called the Temple of the Moon Priest, and I did another one of these one-page dungeons called the Library Beneath the Sands. And then I moved on to basically running them through Alton's Door by Ben Lawrence.
Yep.
And the world, the kind of the setting, the key references, I used Electric Bastion Land, the kind of setting book, because that has a lot of those failed careers in, and that allows players to really kind of get in with the hooks that are in their character, and it kind of gives a lot of flavor of the world. So the world that I was kind of creating was similar to the one that's in the book, but there were a couple of like film references that were really in my head. Do you know the City of Lost Children, the Jeunet and Caro film? Yeah. That was the biggest one. I was like, just imagine that it's that, basically. And that's kind of what I'm going for. And the Through Alton's Door stuff is a bit different to that, but I was kind of like using elements of the way that I'd built the world above ground, that when they dropped down into the Underdark, basically, it kind of had like a thematic consistency. And that's a super interesting dungeon, and there's like a lot of space in there as well because he's not finished it yet. So the it's interesting that the players, as usual, like when we got down there, we think we did about three sessions, and at the end of the third session, they were going to like where there is no map, of course. But yeah, that's been awesome because, like I said, it's been with old friends of mine, many of whom don't even live in the UK anymore, and we're playing online just using Owlbear and Discord for voice and chat. And yeah, it's like a really nice, we're kind of doing it monthly, and that's been really great. And one of the guys who was playing in that game, he was one of the guys that played a bit when we were younger. He said after we'd done a few of those sessions, he was like, how about we do an in-person game in London? So off the back of that, my friend's been running a game that's, we're using Cairn as the system, and it's really cool. I mean, he's done a lot of work. He's used these, people can Google it. This guy called John Speed did these amazing maps of England in the kind of 17th, 18th century. And he's used those and basically overlaid hexes for overland travel. And he's keyed most of the major cities in England. Mm-hmm. And it's set in, it's like a world turned upside down, kind of English Civil War period. So like a key film reference would be like A Field in England, that kind of like period. But there is kind of the occult is kind of creeping in at the edges. There's like, you know, there's John Dee and there's mysticism. So it's, again, it's all stuff that I love. And again, just playing it with like old friends, a couple of whom have played, a couple of whom haven't like at all. And that's, we're running that. We're trying to run that as like a monthly in person. So yeah, that's been totally awesome as well. And like I said, that OSE game kind of came to an end just before the end of summer, maybe a bit before. But a bunch of guys from that server I'm also now playing with in, we've been using Best Left Buried, but we're playing we started with the Lawn Song of the Bachelor, the ZX Sue module, and we've gone on to play the new big book that came out, The Reach of the Roach God. So again, that's with kind of a bunch of people from that London Role Players Collective server. Mm-hmm. So keeping that going. And then on top of that, I've just signed up for another in-person game in Deptford, which is near where I live in South London, with a guy called Sean Smith, who pops up on Discords. He's like another regular in the kind of UK community. And I always said since I got back in that I had to try 5e, because even though I suspect that it might not entirely be my cup of tea, I kind of feel like I've got to play it. And I've just been waiting for kind of the right group and the right kind of opportunity to play it. And Sean messaged me because I played in a few of his games in some one-day cons, which I'll also mention, in London. And he was like, hey, you know, you said you wanted to try 5e. I've got a mega dungeon. You're going to love it. I was like, okay, cool. So that's probably going to be like a weekly game that he'll run kind of West Marches style, which is kind of how my OSE game was. Cause you know, not everyone at our age can make every week. So it'll be kind of like an open table mega dungeon, but using 5e. So I'm quite interested. And he sent me a generator, but I said to him, the best way for me to learn systems is usually to like roll up a character using the book, and seeing as I kind of want to experience what the system's like, I'm going to get the player's handbook and roll up and do it properly and see what I think. So yeah, I mean, that's most of it. The only other thing that I've not covered is that, as I just referenced there, again, through the Grognar Files community, there are these kind of one-off, one-day events that have been going on in London that are, they're not like private. There's no like exclusivity, but it's mainly for people like within the community. So they're advertised publicly, but you know, if you're in the Discords, you know, you go along, and they're just running pubs in London, and they're just one day in-person events, morning session, afternoon session. And again, those have been great. I played some Morvason. I played a Call of Cthulhu 7th edition game that was really great. It was a pre-written scenario, but it was really fun. And on a separate day, there was a guy that ran a whole day of, this was where I played with Sean, it was a day-long Dragon Warriors convention. So wow. It was like 10 tables of English people of a certain vintage playing just Dragon Warriors. And the guy, Dave Morris, isn't it? Dave Morris just turned up in the middle of the day, the guy that read Dragon Warriors, who's also big. I mean, if you play Wajibajiga, he's big in Tekamel. He's big in like the Tekamel community, isn't he, Dave Morris? So that was pretty awesome. We were just like in the middle of a game, and they were like, holy, it's the guy that wrote the damn game is here. And that was where I played with Sean, and Sean did a whole day, because a lot of people did a morning session of something and an afternoon session of something else, whereas Sean did a whole day session. It was like a really awesome adventure where you literally got to, you know, it was good. Pillar to post. So yeah, I mean, that's most of the stuff I've been doing.
Right. That's interesting. So Sean, I know mostly he does a lot of like really rules light games, the games that he writes.
Yeah, big into FKR. Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm kind of surprised at although I haven't played any of their games, but online or anything with you. But yeah, 5e, that's kind of a surprise. I'm kind of shocked. That's not in a bad way, but that's interesting because yeah, I see a lot of those
light games. Yeah, that's partly why that's partly why I thought it'd be exactly because you know most of the games I played with Sean, I played Dungeon World with him once, mm-hmm. PBTA ish. I mean, Dragon War is fairly crunchy. But you're right, yeah, a lot of the stuff that he writes is much more rules light FKR style, but I thought that's quite an interesting, you know, someone who's more of that school kind of running 5e, I thought might make for an interesting game. And he's an awesome dungeon master, really creative, and yeah, really great at reacting to stuff. I mean, that's always the thing that's not scared me off necessarily, but with that PBTA, the you know, like failure with a complication, particularly from like a GMing style, you've got to be pretty agile, nimble on your feet. And I just worry, like if I was running those kind of games, that I'd seize up. Whereas I played those games with Sean, and he's just like constantly like bang, bang, bang. It's like yeah, like, amazing skill to have.
Yeah, it's interesting. So it's interesting. So you've definitely dived in with both feet, right? And it's nice because it's a mix. You've got, and we're not going to try to get in the definitions of OSR and new OSR and all that kind of stuff, but you're playing a variety of different games. It's not like you're focusing on OSR and old school games or new school games, or you're doing the whole gambit of a little bit of it. Like you say, you want to experience 5e to say you've done it and to check it out. And I think that's really great that you're willing to do that. And the other thing that I think is interesting here is, so I got the impression that you did GM back, you know, when you're younger, when you played back in the 80s, 90s. So, you know, a lot of people get in and they end up being the forever GM, but you have a good mix. It seems like a pretty healthy mix of GMing and playing. So is that, are you intentionally trying to keep that balance of?
Yeah. Know? Yeah, for sure. I think partly it's because, like I said, particularly within the kind of the Grognard Files and the London Role Playing Collective kind of milieu, there's a lot of guys with a lot of experience. And mm-hmm. So when I run things, I usually like to have played them at least once, at least in a one shot before I try and run them myself. So I've got like a good feel for it. And I'm still yet to run anything at a con, slightly because it just gives me the fear that with that like limited time slot, because a lot of my games that I've run, like, so there's been one page, both those one page dungeons I ran, that there should be like, they're kind of like one, they're set up, I guess, to be kind of like one shots. And they've been three or four sessions, just because if you're playing with players who are interested in exploring, and I always like encourage that as a GM, I'm not trying to like railroad people to get to the big bad or the end or whatever it is. I just like things to kind of meander like that. So I worry that if I was to run something at a convention, we wouldn't get past like the first room in like, you know, like 3 hours. But I'm sure I'll get there eventually. And particularly a lot of these kind of like one day con things that have been going on in London, it's like a very welcoming community of people that are like super supportive. So I'm sure that like sooner or later I will end up running something at a con. But yeah, I mean, I love playing, and also the GMing is super rewarding. I love it. And I love the prep, but I do have a wife and two kids and a job. And so, and also because I don't like saying I'm OCD because people say that in an offhand way. And there are people that do have OCD, and that's like a problem. So I don't like kind of saying that flippantly, but I'm quite a perfectionist, I guess. So when I'm doing my prep, like I definitely prep, you know how it is. I prep way too much. And then like I was saying, then the players go the other way anyway. So,
right. Well, you've got two pages of notes for this talk,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Which is good. And you did the same thing. In fact, when we go back to Cerebrivor, folks, there's a link in the show notes to these things we're talking about. There's a link to James's notes. I guess you still have it up online, but the notes he made.
Oh, yeah. So on Google Drive. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's great. So that, no, that's wonderful. And you know, it's really an art of being able to adjust. The key, I think, to a convention adventure or a limited time adventure is to have it a little bit modular. So if you need to pull things out, you can. Like when I ran Barbarians Lemuria for you guys, I've run that scenario quite a bit. And different people, like your group, you know, you spent quite a bit of time bartering with the, or haggling with the father, you know, the one character's father, and trying to figure that out. And then you went to somebody's house and you're like, oh, we're going to use this house. And, you know, and you dealt with those people in the house. And a lot of groups never did either one of those two things, right? So, you know, it's one of those things you have to just kind of figure out, you know, are there bits in this that I could leave out if I have to, but still have it being a satisfying adventure, right? So I think that helps.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, no, that was super fun. I didn't even mention that. That was another thing that came about through the Grognard Files Discord community. There's like one of the many channels on there is, you know, people looking to try. And you kindly offered to run Barbarians of Lemuria for a couple of groups. And that's definitely one of the bits on my list is games I'd like to play and run. And I'd like to play more of that. Mm-hmm. For sure, because it's super fun to play. And in terms of other games that I'd like to play, I didn't mention, I played DCC 3 or 4 times as one shots. Really enjoyed it. I played straight DCC 3 times, and I played the Lankmar variant at the Grognard Files online con, which was earlier this year. That Blythe ran, that was awesome. And I'd love to play the new variant, the Dying Earth variant, because I love those Vance novels. And I've seen it being offered at conventions, but it's super popular, so it keeps filling up like straight away. But that was actually another awesome game I played. The other game I played at the Grognard Files online con earlier in the year, there's a gentleman that posts on there called Tristan, who's an English guy, but he's over in Japan. And he has been, because, you know, Call of Cthulhu is massive in Japan. Like, they love it. And there's a load of source material and adventures and modules written in Japanese. And because Tristan can speak Japanese, he translates these. So you can play. We use 7th edition, but I don't think it would necessarily matter which version of Call of Cthulhu you're playing in. But you can play Cthulhu scenarios that were written in Japanese, but he's translated it all into English. So we played this absolutely as brilliant, like, super, you know, heavy, oppressive vibe, like creeping tension ratcheting up. Brilliant adventure. Can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but highly recommend it. If you ever get a chance to play in one of Tristan's online Call of Cthulhu games, very good. And again, because that was online and I played at, I think we either started at midnight or 1 a.m. UK time. So I was playing like literally in the middle of the night. I think we wrapped up at about 4 a.m. UK time, and I was playing with, I think, someone in Australia, Tristan in Japan, myself in London, and I think someone in Germany. So it was literally, you know, all over the map. And again, how awesome is that, that with the technology that we now have, like I said, you know, in the early 90s, I couldn't find someone in Kingston upon Thames to play with. And then fast forward, you know, 30 years and you know, you're literally playing with people all over the world, and you have the options, like you were saying. That's part of the reason that I've kind of kept it all mixed up, is there are just so many options now, and it's like, why limit yourself? You know, try everything and then figure out what you like. And then in terms of running, it's like, you know, narrowing it down from all the stuff I played into what I think I could, you know, successfully run for people and that they'd be interested in, is basically kind of been my approach.
Right. So we kind of started to segue a little bit. Let's talk about maybe the games that are on your list that you're interested in trying out.
My to-do list. Well, the big one that I've still not played, that's, you know, a big game within the Grognard Files community, is RuneQuest. And I have flirted with that. There are, you know, literally whole Discords dedicated to RuneQuest. And there are multiple GMs within that community that run one-shots at cons. And that's definitely like a big one on my to-do list in the next year or so, is to kind of get my head around RuneQuest. I bought the starter set and I started reading it. And I think it's a weird thing, you know, when people talk about something being super difficult, it's the same with those Malazan Book of the Fallen that I've spoken to Joe about. A lot of people talk a lot about how complicated those books are. And I mean, like, they are a little bit complex, but they're just novels. You just read them. And like, I read the RuneQuest starter set and I was like, yeah, it's kind of complicated. It's just a role-playing game though. All the rules are here in the book. You know, you can read them. Anyone could do it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to definitely that's high on the list for playing. Like I said, I'd love to play a bit more Barbarians of Lemuria. Love to play the DCC Dying Earth variant and just DCC in general. I think it's like a super fun con game. And the OSE group that ended, they've just restarted, but because I'm moving house, I couldn't commit to regular Sundays because I'm literally in the middle of a double house move at the moment and working kids. But they've started playing Ultraviolet Grasslands, the Luca Rejek, I never know how to say his name, game. So they've just started that. And I'm hoping that once all my house situation settled, I can recommit to regular Sunday. So hopefully I'll get to play some of that. And a similar game to that that I've still never played, but I own and I love, because both Ultraviolet Grasslands and the other game is Vaults of Varn by Leo Hunt. And they're both, my favorite author of all the Appendix N kind of sci-fi fantasy guys is Gene Wolfe. I love Book of the New Sun. I love Malazan, but Book of the New Sun in particular. I think it's the only thing I've read three times. There's a few things I've read twice, but I've read that whole cycle three times. And I'm really up for playing Vaults of Varn, because I think Ultraviolet Grasslands has that as a kind of like a, you know, like a sort of a side influence along with a load of Luca's own kind of crazy original imaginative kind of flavor. And Vaults of Varn has, it's definitely Dune and Book of the New Sun are the main influences. And also, you know, obviously I love Dune too. So I'd love to play some of that. And then in terms of running, I mean, I did, like I'm sure a lot of people did, I did back the Dolmenwood Kickstarter, and it does look awesome. And it does really fulfill, as we've discussed, a lot of that dark English forest folk fairy tale vibe, which I'm really into. So I'll see where my group is at that I've been running using Electric Bastion Land into the Odd to do my kind of Throttle's Door vibe. And I'm thinking once that drops and comes out and the physical arrives, so we probably still got a bit of a wait on that, I think. But when it does drop, I'm going to kind of propose that to my existing online group that we could maybe move on to Dolmenwood. And like I said, I think by that point, because they'll have played Into the Odd style three stat for long enough, that I think moving up to, you know, OSE style stuff, they'll be totally fine with that by that point. And like I said, I'd love to run Vaesen in more of a campaign mode, not necessarily for like a super long campaign, but I think you could run it for, you know, you could get like 6 months out of that easy, I reckon. Just with the source material that's in the books that are to hand. And the other big one on my list, because I love sci-fi as well as the kind of Gene Wolfe kind of Dune style, I love kind of like hard sci-fi, and I'm a big fan of the novels of Alistair Reynolds. Do you know those books? The Revelation Space sequence of novels, all of his stuff, but the Revelation Space stuff, I think, is the most kind of coherent universe. And that's from the point I first got back into gaming, one of the first things I thought, how it'd be really awesome to do a big, you know, universe spanning Revelation Space style sci-fi game. So that's the one I've really got like in the back of my head that I'll get to eventually, but I need to spend a bit more time looking at system and figuring out what would work best for something like that. I've looked at Stars Without Number and Classic Traveler with the two that like immediately sprang to mind. And I also did a bit of play with Starforged, the Sean Tompkins, you know, the Iron Sworn sci-fi variant, which is really cool. I mean, it has a lot that you could use to kind of procedurally generate a universe. But I kind of feel like almost because I'm going to have a lot of that from the novels, I maybe don't need that. But anyway, that's in the back of my head. So any advice you have about sci-fi systems you think might fit hard sci-fi / space opera, I'd be very open to, Jason.
It's tough, right? Because most systems are going to come with a setting, and then that setting's kind of baked in the rules a little bit, and then if that doesn't fit what you want, now you're having to adjust rules and do all that. Where if you go into something without a baked in setting, the problem is now you're doing a lot of front end work as the DM building it. So like if you went with GURPS, say, you know, we talk about Roleplay Rescue and Trey Webster with GURPS obviously could do this, right? But you need to build it from the ground up is the problem. Where if you can find a setting that's really close to those books, then it might be easier just to modify that setting a little bit. Traveler, especially the, you know, the first edition of Traveler, the original 77 Traveler, of course, doesn't have an implicit setting in it. So it's, you know, it's pretty good. But there are a lot of systems out there. I think you need to decide, and we throw these terms out there, but what kind of rules you're looking for, you know, because honestly, I don't know that I'm seriously suggesting this, but like Space Master, honestly, is actually a pretty versatile system that you can use around a lot of things. But if you like percentile dice and you like crunchy systems and you want all these things, but if you're not looking for that, obviously Space Master is off the table. You know, although if you do that, you'll be hero over at the Frankenstein's RPG podcast. if you get Space Master to work. But yeah, it's hard. I don't know. It depends how crunchy you want the game to be, if there are mechanics that you like, and then adjusting from there. It's one thing I have to admit I really like with Stars Without Numbers, what Kevin Crawford's done with that is how he differentiates skills from combat, where the skill system, because it's on that curve, the 3D6 bell curve, your characters feel competent. But combat, because it's D20, it's swingy, which is, and many people might argue those terms, but combat is less certain because you're using that D20, where skills are more certain. So you feel competent, but combat's dangerous. And that's a neat, you know, mix there.
Yeah.
Well designed.
Yeah. I really like that. I got the PDF of that, and yeah, I did like it. It felt good, but I think you're right. I think what I need to do is actually reread the novels and reread the novels with a view to running it and being like, what do I want this to do? You know, it's going to need ship to ship combat. Probably it's going to need, you know, some kind of psionic system maybe. And just picking out those things and then trying to figure out what I need. But like you said, I mean, a lot of people, again, maybe because of the vintage of people I hang out with, have said, yeah, classic travel, do it, no problem. You know, because like you said, you know, it kind of has a vague setting, but hardly. So it's like, you know, it's loose enough that you could get away with it. But yeah, I'll see.
Yeah, it's definitely not to bog this down, but it's definitely one of those things that the system in the end, unless you're using something that's totally incoherent, like Cyborg Commando. The system, for the most part, in the end, is not going to matter as much as what you and the players bring to it. You know, obviously you need psionic rules if you want psionics, but and that's, psionics are, though, one of those things that you need rules that scale correctly to feel the power, to get that right power level to match the setting you're looking for. But for the most part, honestly, whether you use Traveler or you use Stars Without Number, it could be just as good a game. You know what I mean? It's sometimes I think we spend more time, and it's easy to do because I do it. We spend more time worrying about the game, the rule system, the mechanics, than we do the other parts. And in the end, the rules, you know, they just facilitate and help us go through the tale, right? So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think there's definitely like an element of a lot of people who run and GM and enjoy books spend a lot of time thinking about rules when, yeah, I think a lot of the time, like you're saying, I think as much of it will be from setting and context and rereading the books, and that will end up being the thing that really makes it rather than whatever rule system you end up choosing for someone like that. So yeah, that's where I'll definitely keep you posted. I'll keep you updated on James's big long-term sci-fi project. It's in the works.
No, I look forward to hearing it. Sorry, my dogs are bark in the background here. No, I'm looking forward to that, and we'll get you back as you solidify that. Maybe we'll get you back on and we'll talk about that. That'll be great.
Yeah, sure.
Excellent. Well, you know, we've been talking almost an hour here, and I really appreciate it. I want to be precious of your time, and you know, this getting back into the hobby is a great thing, you know. And I was a little bit negligent initially, not to mention the Grognard files, and I mentioned Che as well, and I owe them a huge debt myself. That's one of the first podcasts I listened to when I kind of started getting back in the hobby a little bit, and you know I've met a bunch of great people over there, not in person but online playing. I've been able to play on the online Grog meets quite a bit, and yeah, it's a great community, highly recommended to everybody out there, no matter where you are in the world.
Yeah, I think so. If you, because I'd imagine a lot of your audience would be people from the US, but if you want to hear kind of English men of a certain vintage from the northwest of England who have a very a laconic and amusing take on games. A lot of people say it's a bit like listening to a couple of mates in the pub, and it really is like that. So if you've ever, if you're in the States, you've ever wanted to know what it's like to be in a pub just outside Manchester, but with people talking about role-playing games, it's a good podcast for it. And yeah, big up Shay as well. I know that, you know, he's taking a bit of a break at the moment, but yeah, that was a great podcast as well for kind of keeping you motivated. And it's, I mean, I think it's awesome that he's just like, you know, incredibly honest with, you know, his own kind of practice within role playing. And I think there's a lot of us that are in kind of similar headspaces to him a lot of the time. And it's really awesome that someone kind of has like the courage and honesty to be able to kind of put that out there. It's pretty rare, and it's, yeah, very inspiring. So yeah, big up Shay as well.
Yep. I couldn't agree more. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And we'll talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks, Jason. Speak soon.
After we had finished recording, we realized that we left out one of the most important things that Che Webster does over at Roleplay Rescue, and that's asking the interviewee what recommendations or advice they have for other people coming back in the hobby. So I reached out to James to close that loop.
Hey, Jason, and hello to all the Nerds RPG Variety Cast listeners out there. This is James Knight in London, England, calling. Yesterday, Jason and myself recorded an episode that detailed my return to the hobby over the last couple of years, which I'm afraid was mainly me talking and Jason listening. So thank you for the time, Jason, and the space. I really enjoyed it. Jason messaged me on Discord afterwards because one of the things we meant to discuss but we didn't quite get to was any tips I had for anyone else that's in a similar position and has recently returned to the hobby. I think the main thing I would say is that, again, I referenced a lot in the episode, the Grognard Vials, which has been a real North Star for me in my return to the hobby, and Dirt the Dice and Blythe have got a motto or a mantra, which is plays the thing. And that would be what I would say. It's really easy, I think, to get stuck looking at blogs, reading articles online, listening to podcasts, even reading rule books and buying rule books, when really the game is played either at the virtual or the real table. And you really learn a system, and you learn what you like and what you don't like by playing. And I hope that came across in the episode I recorded with Jason, that I've really tried to play as much as possible and play as many different and varied games as possible. And I think unless you have a very fixed idea of what it is you want to play, I'd say that's another really good tack. You know, don't try and confine yourself to a certain genre or area. Play as widely as possible, get stuck in. As we touched on, you know, there's, in a lot of ways, there's never been a better time, because with the options that the internet affords us, there are a plethora of Discords. So whether it be that you go for a Discord associated with a specific game you like, or even a play style, you know, there are OSR Discords, there are NSR Discords, you know, try and figure out what you think you broadly like and then just get involved. And everyone, broadly speaking, you know, wants to play. So it's pretty easy. Almost all Discords have a looking for a game or looking for a group channel, and just get stuck in. And if you do play, either online or in person, and you don't like the game or you don't like the group, that's okay. You know, you can always try again. So that would be my main advice, is just get stuck in. And the other thing I would say is, a lot of people, and I certainly count myself in this bracket, are really busy, you know, have family life, work life, commitments, and a lot of games are open table or West Marches style. So if you are busy, then finding a game like that can work really well. I spoke quite a bit about the OSE game I was in. I mean, that was a regular weekly game, but it was open table enough, and there were enough players that, you know, you could come and go. And as long as you communicate with your GM and your fellow players, and you don't just kind of ghost last minute, that's another really good option. So you can find a game that you like and still have that flexibility that, you know, if life gets in the way, no one's going to be, you know, annoyed that you've not turned up. So that would be my hot tips. Hopefully that's more than enough of from me on this. Now that you've got the main episode, now you've got an addendum, an appendix JK, James Knight appendix. All right. Cheers, Jason. Thanks again for the platform. And thanks to anyone that's taken the time to listen. Take care. Bye.
Once again, I'd like to thank James for coming on, being such a great guest, and I look forward to having him on again. Folks, if you have any thoughts or comments on this episode, and if you have any thoughts on what rule set he should use for his space game, please call and let me know. All the contact information is in the show notes. You can send email, you can use SpeakPipe, there's a Google Voice number. If you can make it work, you can use the website for Spotify for podcasters. You can send me a message on Discord. Heck, you can send James a message on Discord, actually. But reach out. Let us know what you think of the interview. Let us know what you think of what space game he should use or anything else we talked about. And I will play it and get James's feedback. And I look forward to having James back on the show again. Until next time, be excellent to each other.
Your auntie or a joke about your spouse, but the operator's screaming it's coming from inside the house. What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? What's in the box? Well, the audience is pretty sure he took a pretty head, and the only question left is if I fiddle shoot him dead. Bring on the gore, bring on the gore. Here is a dice pen and your moil is by the tipper, and I'm assuming that your partner back there in the wood chipper. Don't look away. Don't look away. Well, the zombies are arising and the world has gone to heck. We're living for the dying and we're dying for the train wreck.
So I have Joe Salvador with me, and we're doing a quick spot check of his ninja knowledge before tonight's Night of the Ninja Games. Joe, here's my question for you.
Yes,
who is known as the grandfather of European ninjutsu? Between 1982 and 1986, he introduced this ancient martial arts to Sweden, Norway, Finland, Germany, Holland, Spain, Greece, England, Scotland, and Ireland.
So my initial reaction is Stephen Hayes, but I don't know if that's right. Maybe Masaki Hatsumi.
Oh, but good guesses, but no. He was originally trained and certified by Dr. Thompson. Does that help?
Nope.
Okay. Well, I'll open a package I have here from Budo Videos from far away Orange, California. And this Budo Videos is a book, I hope in English, written by the grandfather of European ninjutsu, Bo Munthe, M-U-N-T-H-E. It's called My Way, 1975-2015, 40 years Bunikin in Europe. B-U-J-I.
I've heard of this man. That's pretty cool.
You don't know this man.
No.
And of course,
I don't. Yeah.
I can't show you the book because I've got the where it's blur in the background, so you can't see it. But it's
that's all right. But it's yeah, very cool.
So
where'd you find that? Like Amazon or?
Yeah, well, so I did. I actually ordered it from Budo Video. I'll send you the link.
Directly. I see. Okay.
Yeah. Because they're the only place you can get this for a decent price. It wasn't expensive.
Interesting.
But
I've heard of Budo Videos. Like they put out a lot of like training stuff. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So this is the only place I found his book. I know him primarily because he was in the Ninja Mission. Of course, you're familiar with the Ninja Mission.
Very cool.
Ninja movie ever. Hmm. So, yeah.
All right. Well, you got me. I failed that test.
That's okay. Your penance for failing the test is to join me for a review of Ninja Mission at a date, or the Ninja Mission at a date to be determined.
Will do. Will do. I accept that mission.
Excellent.